This episode is brought to you by CLA.
Here's your money briefing for Wednesday, December 27th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The red-hot labor market cooled off a bit in 2023. Employers slowed the pace of hiring, raises got smaller, and job openings fell to a 28-year low. But what can you expect in 2024 if you're looking for a job or a raise?
Companies are going to look at people who are a proven commodity working for them already, and they're going to give wage increases. But when you're hiring people from the outside, what used to be 2-3 years ago, 15, 20, 30% increases, that's not going to happen anymore.
And more companies are expected to make use of AI.
If you have a job that involves something that an AI can do more efficiently or more quickly and doesn't involve human interaction, your head's going to be on the chopping block.
We'll talk to LaSalle Network staffing firm founder and CEO Tom Gimbel and NYU professor Tessa West after the break.
When it comes to planning for the future, taxes and wealth advisory tend to be viewed as two separate conversations, but some things are just better together. That's why at Clifton Larson Allen, they call it TWELFT. Here's Clayton Bland, Chief Wealth Advisory Officer at CLA.
More often than not, all of the decision-making around the tax relationship are predicated on things that have happened in the past. An investment advisory relationship would be something that's looking at, hey, what are your future goals? How can we allocate capital to help you achieve those goals? So when we talk about 12, tax and wealth together, that's really what we provide at CLA with that combination of both professionals. It provides for the necessary information to make the decision that will have the best impact on you, both from a goal standpoint of my portfolio and also from a tax consequence standpoint of when I file my tax return.
Visit claconnect.com for more insights from Clifton Larson Allen. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Investment advisory services are offered through Clifton Larson Allen Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The days of big raises and seemingly endless job listings may be over, at least for now. LaSalle Network staffing firm founder and CEO Tom Gimbel joins me to discuss what workers and job seekers can expect from the job market in 2024. So Tom, we've been in a tight labor market for a few years now, with workers holding the balance of power when it comes to wages. What can we expect in 2024?
When you talk about the economy and the jobs market, we look at where wages are at. And what we've seen over the past few years was a quasi-artificial inflation based on municipalities and certain cities and states paying hourly wages that were so much higher during COVID, and they couldn't go back on that. So on the hourly basis, they've jumped up so much, they're not going to keep doing that. On the white-collar side and salaries in that area, it's now become more of an employer's market again, more of a traditional market. We're seeing companies do larger RIFs, reduction in force and layoffs, and that puts the ball back in the employer's hands when it comes to salaries. Our survey showed that compensation requirements was the number one challenge that companies faced, meaning employees wanted more money than companies were willing to pay. And that's going to change tremendously. 90% of the companies we surveyed plan to increase wages in 2024. However, half of that by no more than 5%. So what we're seeing is that companies are going to look at people who are a proven commodity working for them already, and they're going to give wage increases. They're going to give salary increases. But when you're hiring people from the outside, what used to be 2-3 years ago, 15, 20, 30% increases, that's not going to happen anymore, because the unemployment number with more people coming into the pool is going to drop that.
How will benefits work into that equation?
The insurance from a benefit standpoint are always there. And those, while they keep going up, it's not something that you can really take away from and say, we're not going to offer health insurance anymore. Where the benefits that get affected are more retirement benefits of how much are we going to match as an organization? Are we going to do it up to 2%, 4%, 8%? So it becomes that companies that are having a harder time won't match as much, but there'll still be the same number of benefits. It's just what they cost.
Will there be any benefits that might be added to the list that weren't there before, like, for example, remote work?
into the early stages of the pandemic, a lot of employees thought, oh, I'll get paid more to work remotely. And now it's not that way. That if you want remote work, a lot of times there's a trade-off, and it might be taking less salary for the flexibility of being able to work remotely. But in addition to that, you can see people playing with paid time off a little bit more as a variable. Learning and development has always been something that big companies do, but now small and mid-sized companies are investing more money in learning and development, and that's kind of a trade-off as well.
That was LaSalle Network founder and CEO Tom Gimbel. Other issues facing many employees in 2024 will include working from home versus the office and companies incorporating AI into their business models. For more, let's bring in NYU professor Tessa West. Tessa, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Tessa, in the past few years, remote work has become a deal breaker for some people when considering a job. But many companies are looking to bring their employees back into the swing of coming into the office. Is this debate going to stay with us in 2024?
Absolutely. I don't think this debate is going anywhere. It's just taking on a different form than it did before. So when we first walked into this debate, we really focused on the structural issues around the workplace. Do I want to have a shorter commute? Do I want to spend more time with my kids and have more time to run errands? But now we're actually seeing kind of the long-term psychological costs or benefits of working from home or the office. So people are really shifting focus, thinking about things like, am I losing social connection? Am I task switching so often or having a hard time jumping back into things because I'm hot desking or hoteling at work? We're having the same conversation, but the focus has really shifted from the structural to the psychological.
This has been going on for a couple of years now. What's going to change about this conversation in 2024?
We're going to have a lot more kind of idea of what companies will and won't pay for when it comes to office space. Are they going to get rid of their brick and mortar offices entirely? Are they switching to hoteling or these models where people come in a sort of temporary workspace? But what's not going to have certainty is how they're going to solve these issues. People will know a lot more likely, you know, what is the chance they're going to walk in and have a permanent desk or not? What they're not going to know is who's going to be around me at the time when I work. So the certainty is going to be on the physical space and the structure, but it's not going to be around all that kind of juicy psychological stuff that happens in the workplace.
A big topic this year in the workplace was AI. Companies are spending more money on implementing and sometimes training workers to use AI. What are some of the ways that they're using it?
So AI has really taken off. It's dramatically shifted the way we work. Some people are outsourcing AI to do tasks that they simply don't want to do. And I see this in my workspace. Draft up emails for me, handing over communications to AI, or things that AI has business doing, like helping us create code if we're programmers, or helping us find sources of information online, or create new materials, or analyze data and things like that. So these are the kind of more interesting ways that we're using AI. But what I've actually noticed also is that companies are kind of ironically becoming much more fine-tuned about knowing where humans are needed and not. So when companies try to kind of outsource AI for human connection, for interfacing with clients and customers, they tend to fall a little bit flat on that front. It's not actually going so well. Where we need AI is to help us produce data, to help us do tasks more quickly, more efficiently, and more accurately than we were doing them before.
And in 2024, what should people keep in mind so their skills stay fresh as AI becomes more of a part of the daily workflow?
So there's a couple organizations that have thought very deeply about this. One thing that they're realizing is that AI is good for things that don't involve complex interpersonal conflict reduction and human interaction. In medical interactions, for instance, these are the kinds of jobs that are actually increasing: nurses, doctors, medical personnel. But the so-called back office jobs, where there isn't any interfacing between you and another person, where you're entering numbers in an Excel spreadsheet, for example, those are the jobs where you're going to get outsourced. So if you have a job that involves something that an AI can do more efficiently or more quickly and doesn't involve human interaction, your head's going to be on the chopping block. If you have a job that involves human connection, where that robot is not going to pass the Turing test, where people insist on having another person to talk to, and, you know, medical interactions or any kind of customer service, those are the jobs that are actually increasing. And those are the kind of skills you should actually be looking to build.
Layoffs are a concern for lots of people. What can they do to prepare for that possibility in 2024?
you have to have these like very blunt conversations with your organization about what the rollout of new layoffs are going to be. So look out for whether your role in your company and others is being replaced by another person or is being replaced by AI. And I think you can really network with people who have the same role as you in other organizations to look for trends. We often don't reach out to strangers to talk about these things, but I've collected some new data showing most people are actually willing to have these conversations.
And paying attention to the staffing trends at your office might send people on the hunt for a new job. What should they know about applying for a job that might be different from previous job searches?
The way jobs work is very different now, but what is good to know is that networking and talking to people ahead of time to figure out how to frame your skills on your resume. Do not batch apply. Tailor your materials, your cover letter, your resume. So apply in a handful of jobs a week, not 50. Resist the urge to use that easy apply button if you can. People rarely actually look at those things. And network with people in human resources and hiring. I think that's something a lot of us fail to do. We network with people who are in our role. We don't network with the people who hire for our role. Find out what they're looking for that's not advertise the so-called hidden curriculum, and don't rely on what's written in a job advertisement to tell you what's really going on. Those things are iterative. They get revised all the time for reasons that have nothing to do with the actual application pool or even what they're looking for. So you really need to talk to people to figure out what exactly are they looking for and what kind of qualifications did the last person who did well at this job have? That's what you should be anchoring your search on, not what's in a job advertisement.
That's NYU Professor Tessa West. And that's it for your Money Briefing. We'll be back tomorrow morning with WSJ's Nicole Friedman and Will Parker to discuss whether buying a home will become more affordable in 2024. This episode was produced by Ariana Osperu with supervising producer Melanie Roy. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by CLA.